This week, we're back to our regular schedule, so don't worry, I'm not going to make you sit through 40 minutes of the Berenstain Bears. Trust me, I'm not going to make you do that. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week, as I said up top, we're back to normal. We're back to just watching a regular Saturday morning episode of the Berenstain Bears from 1985. But, you know, I got to thinking when I was in the shower, because that's the literally only place I actually think. I got to thinking when I was in the shower, what is it, at what point in American history, or world history, I guess, did we decide that animation, animated cartoons, were children's fare? Like, what point did we tip over into it being, I know it had to have been like a process, but when did we decide this is something that it's most just primarily for children? And then we had to have some kind of like weird renaissance where we rediscovered cartoons for adults, which is like 90% of what they make for Hulu now. But when was that? If you look at the history of animation, like animated film cartoons, you have to start with Winsor McCay, who was, you know, not the first person to animate drawings, but he was definitely the first famous person to animate drawings with his Gertie the Dinosaur. And he did Gertie as like a side project for vaudeville because he was still working for the Hearsts, for William Randolph Hearst. He was still drawing, like Little Nemo and Dreams of a Rarebit Fiend and all that. That stuff. He was still doing that. He was still under contract, but he was performing in vaudeville, and he created Gertie the Dinosaur as a film to appear alongside, to replace, I think they were called chalk talks, like the things where he would do a presentation to the audience while drawing images. But this was actually like a cartoon that he could command and that could perform for him. And the only reason he didn't continue along those lines is because Hearst made him stop. Hearst refused to review, like allow any of his films to be reviewed in his newspapers because he was under contract to draw cartoons for the newspaper. It's this whole mess. But the point I'm getting to is these performances were for adults. They were for a ticket buying audience. And as it progressed, as animation progressed, they became more and more child focused. And the reason I ask is because animation, no matter how simple it was, no matter how low budge they got it, no matter how many corners they cut, animation is still a time and labor intensive process. And it's just wild to me that they decided that this money suck that animation was, this like labor suck that animation was, this thing that required the buildings of new facilities and the development of new technologies, was eventually something that we needed to relegate to cheap and easy kiddie fare. Like, it's wild to me that this thing that requires so much time and talent, infrastructure, and contract negotiations, and the development of just entirely new facilities for a studio, they decided was also the thing that they were going to devote to just throw away children's product. I don't understand, like, at what point it became more... At what point did they decide this is something that we're not going to devote any real thought to and we're just going to toss it? I don't know. This is all a long way of saying today we're doing the Berenstain Bears. I think it's episode 20. I believe it's episode 20 overall, like of all the Berenstain Bears episodes. I think this is the 20th episode, which means it is the 30-something episode. I don't know how it works. In any case, we're going to watch it. So I'll see you in the studio. I'll see you in the theater. I'll see you in your seats. I'll see you on the other side. Let's-a-go! And we're back! We're back! We're back, and we just met a pivotal character in the Berenstain. I mean, we've met him before. We've talked about him before. I believe this is the episode. Let me just go back in time a little bit and see. Yep. This is the first episode to feature Jake the Catfish. So the first episode that we covered is the Berenstain Bears, The Surefire Bait, which aired October 25th, 1986, which I guess makes this 1986's Halloween episodes, I guess. They're not scary in any way, but one does involve a talking fish, which is kind of scary. Like if you saw it in real life, you'd be scared. We have discussed Old Jake several times in the past. Old Jake is a catfish that lives in the lake, and Papa is determined to catch him. Now, we covered him because in the Berenstain Bear Scouts and the Coughing Catfish, the Berenstain Bear Scouts try to help Old Jake. He is just a catfish. In the books, he is simply a large catfish that people believe may or may not exist. In the cartoon, he is a character. He speaks with sort of a southern accent. He has a hat that he wears for some reason. I don't know why. It's like a ship's captain hat or like a yachting hat. And he is conversant with the cubs. He is an intelligent man, a boy, a child, a citizen. A member of the voting public, I guess, who lives by himself at the bottom of the lake. He is a bottom feeder, as catfish are. Scavenger. He eats garbage and poop, I guess. I don't know what catfish eat. He has long whiskers like a catfish, which can be deadly, I guess. They seem to think that they're dangerous. And Papa is determined to catch and kill him. This neighbor of theirs, this intelligent man who can talk and have conversations with your children. Papa Bear is like, man, kill that guy. I'm going to kill that guy simply because he exists. And I do eat fish. We know that he eats fish. So this episode is weird in that, not weird, but it's wild. Not wild, but it's a plot. The plot is that Papa Q, unlike many a Papa Q Bear episode, where Papa is going to do something and the cubs know he's going to hurt himself doing it, so they just sort of tag along. This is an episode in which Papa is going to do something and the cubs know he's going to get hurt because he is attempting to kill a friend of theirs and they don't want him to. And rather than saying, Papa, we are good friends with Jake the catfish. He talks to us. He converses with us. He problem solves with us, alongside us. Instead of saying, please don't kill, please, 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 Papa Q Bear, do not kill the man who lives in this water. They instead are like, we just got to warn Jake the catfish. Now, Pop, what happens is Papa gets a book that is a book on catfishing. And throughout this episode, they use the term catfishing, which is fine because it's 1986. It's the year Little Shop of Horrors hit theaters. It's the year I stopped being a movie-going child and became a movie-going man and became upset for the first time in my life, became obsessed with a movie. 1986 is Little Shop of Horrors. The first movie I can say that I was... The way some kids got about Star Wars, I got about Little Shop of Horrors. I pursued everything associated with that film in 1986. There wasn't a lot, but there were, I remember there was a magazine that came out that had it on the cover, and I bought that. It had like kind of like a little behind the scenes making of. There was like little candy Audrey 2s, like that, like little plastic Audrey 2s that you open them up and they had candy inside them. I remember there was that. There was eventually a cartoon based on Little Shop of Horrors. It only ran for one, like half of a Saturday morning season, but I was obsessed with watching it. I got the Little Shop of Horrors book, which covered the history of the Corman film, the stage show, and then the film. I was upset. I got the soundtrack. I got the sheet music. I owned everything I possibly could own with Little Shop of Horrors. That was 86. That's when I was like, no, no, no. I want to envelop myself in this film. It's also when I first learned about Gertie the Dinosaur, as I discussed up top, because I started getting really into the making of movies, the history of film, that ultimately, a couple of years later, led me to read Leonard Maltin's Of Mice and Magic, which is the history of animated films, and taught me about the history of Winsor McCay and Gertie the Dinosaur. In any case, no one used the term hyper-focused. No one used the term neurodivergent at the time, but my tendency to hyper-focus on specific situations, never mind. You get what I'm saying. Coughing catfish. So Papa gets this book that's all about catfishing, and he keeps saying catfishing, and he's gonna catfish people. And in 1986, we were like, I mean, must mean he's going to catch a catfish. But now it's funny to hear him constantly discussing catfishing, experts, tips on catfishing, how to be an expert catfisher. Because, as I said while watching the episode, it leads one to see like Papa like posing as a teenager online or convincing a wealthy widow that he was the man of her dreams. Like things like that. Like it's, watch the episode. It's very amusing. So he wants to catch Jake the catfish. So the cubs do what the cubs do is they warn Jake. Watch out. Papa Q Bear is on the prowl, and he's going to attempt to catch you. Now, if you were an adult, and you probably are, if you were an adult and someone comes up to you and says, my father is going to attempt to trick you into a trap, you're probably going to be like, that, thank you for the warning, I guess, but also, I'm just not going to fall for it. I'm not going to fall for it. So Papa puts together, he takes a clothes hanger, and to that clothes hanger, he attaches a series of hooks that he's like, this is my smorgasbord. And to each hook, he attaches a treat, a snack. He's like, I don't know what Jake's favorite snack is, but I'm going to use this smorgasbord hook to catch this fish. He lowers the hook into the water. And Jake, being an intelligent creature, just picks the food off of the hooks and goes about his day. Papa attempts to pull the hook up, but he anticipates it being heavy. He overcompensates for the weight, and he ends up pulling. Oh, and Jake has attached the hooks to the seat of his pants. Just to the seat of his pants, Papa pulls him into the water with his own, like, it causes him to lose balance, I guess, pulls him into the water. I guess the hooks, the five or so hooks, six or seven hooks on this massive hook, impale, I guess they go into his skin, I guess, because the next shot is him laying over a rock as his own children disentangle him from the hooks. But then Sister Bear pours alcohol, like booze. She has a flask of booze, which she pours over his butt to call, and he's like, ah, yikes. So I guess the hooks went into his flesh, and Sister had disinfectant in a flask, which I guess is what we're watching. It's a very strange scene, just in the sense that, like, the sister, and then you see her, like, a close-up of her, like, screwing the lid on her flask, which is, you better believe I already turned into an image macro of Sister basically saying, like, that's good booze. She doesn't say, I didn't have her say that. I had her say something far wittier, which I'll post right here if you're watching it at home. If you're listening along, so just assume it's hilarious. So Papa does he? So what ends up happening is Papa pulls a Rumpelstiltskin, or Jake the catfish pulls a Rumpelstiltskin, or has a Rumpelstiltskin pulled on him. Papa overhears Jake saying a rhyme about to himself, which is also a rhyme to the listening public, which is my favorite. He loves toasted cheese balls. That's the one snack he can't resist. So Papa goes home and makes toasted cheese. This is very convoluted. Papa goes home and he starts making toasted cheese balls. And Mama Bear is like, what you making? And he's like, toasted cheese balls. I'm going to catch that fish. And she's like, At the same time, the cubs are like, we got to warn Jake. We got to help Jake. We got to protect Jake. Now, rather than saying, Jake, Papa's going to lower a toasted cheese ball into your lake, don't, or just for the next, like, few days, don't accept any food that gets lowered into the lake. Like, that's basically what he should do. Again, he's a man. He's a human being. He's a character. He's an intelligent living being. Instead of doing that, instead of just going, just don't accept any food that's lowered, they go to Grizzly Gran, who's barbecuing honeycomb. And she's like, I have, want a taste of my honeycomb? I'm using my super special secret sauce. I'm putting my special super hot sauce on it. And so she puts the hot sauce onto, she like gives them, like, it's super hot, I guess is what I'm saying. They tell that they're going to a party. They need her super strong hot sauce, which they take, they put it, they're like, we're too late to warn Jake. So they get a syringe full of hot sauce and secretly inject the toasted cheese ball with hot sauce. So when Papa throws it in, Jake's like, I can't resist. The one thing I can't resist. He gets in his mouth. Papa's like, aha. He pulls him up. Jake comes up with the cheese ball. But then he's like, yow, it's hot. Fire comes out of his mouth and he spits the cheese ball out and goes back into the thing. And Papa's like, I guess that was the wrong treat. Back to the drawing board. And the cubs are like, right. And then that's it. That's it. And the whole ending doesn't make any sense to me, because if Jake is capable of spitting the cheese ball out, like, that means that it's, even though it's on a hook, and even though Papa was able to pull him out of the lake, that means that he wasn't able to pull him out of the lake because he was hooked. Just he had his lips tight around the cheese ball. But that also means that then Jake couldn't have swallowed the cheese ball. It's still in his mouth, but it's disintegrated enough that the hot sauce got to his mouth and had time to take effect. And that means that he's capable of simply spitting out the cheese ball, because he does. which means that he could have simply spit out the cheese ball when he hit the air. Like, he would have been pulled out of the lake and been like, ah, a trick of sorts, and then been like, puh, spit out the cheese ball, which means it wouldn't have worked unless he can't resist eating the cheese ball. But again, the cheese ball, the hook didn't go into his face. So he would have then simply swallowed the cheese ball and it gone back down into the lake because he wasn't hooked. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any logical sense to me. And also, so I guess Papa's giving up now. Like, he's like back to the drawing board. But that means he's still going to try to murder Jake the catfish. Right? That's easy. He's still going to try to kill Jake the catfish is what I'm saying. I don't get it. Doesn't make any sense to me. But what do I know? Next episode. I keep knocking things off my... I got to stop with the... This time I knocked... A Knight in Shining Armor. I got these Playmobil... I collect Playmobil monsters. I only collect the monsters from Playmobil. Any kind of ghosts, goblins, ghouls, or monsters I collect. So Scooby-Doo I thought was going to be a boon because there's all kinds of people in scary costumes, right? In the Scooby-Doo line. But what you do is you would send away for a mystery bag. Like you would get, you didn't know which creature you were going to get in the mystery bag. And it was always fun. So I ordered two of them and I opened one up and it's the Black Knight, which is just a guy dressed like a knight. It's not a monster or a creature or a ghoul. And if you take the helmet off, it's just a bespectacled man. It's me, essentially. It's just me. So I was like, well, that's disappointing, but I have another one. And so I opened the second one up that I ordered and I don't even know where it is, but it's just another knight. It was another knight. So for the price of two monsters, I don't know where it is. For the price of two monsters or ghosts or whatever, I just got two knights in shining armor, which I didn't want, but now I have them. They're the worst. In any case, I guess I could have gotten the racist one. There's a kind of racist one, like the witch doctor one. Could have gotten that. I didn't. I eventually got like a guy dressed as a ghost, I think. I don't even know where he is now. He's with my other ghosts. But yeah, so I keep gesticulating wildly and knocking things off my shelves. So if you can see, there's my Playmobiles. Most of them are right behind me over there. But that's neither here nor there. So the second episode we watched was The Cat's Meow. A few interesting things in this episode. One, there's a character named Honey Bear. Two, it is not Honey Bear, their sister. It is another bear entirely, a girl named Honey Bear, who they are cat sitting for. Honey Bear has left her cat Puff with her with the bear family. Honey Bear is going away to the Great Grizzly Mountains. We never hear from or see her again. Now, this is one of those episodes. It's Roby Gorin wrote the episode. So we know it's going to be a little gag influenced. It's another... Like the Surefire Bait, it's another Papa gets involved. Except this time, Papa is actually the smart one. So what happens is this. Whew. Again, the plot is needlessly complicated considering how it all comes out in the end. Brother and Sister Bear are cat-sitting for their friend Honey Bear. They're cat-sitting the cat Puff. Puff starts flipping out. She's like, psst. And they're like, what's going on with Puff? Puff is reacting to the presence of dogs in the vicinity. Who are these dogs? They're hunting dogs. Who are they hunting with? They're hunting with Squire Grizzly. What are they hunting? They're going out on a fox hunt. Apparently, Squire Grizzly does fox hunts every year or so, in which he goes out and kills a fox with the help of guns and horses and dogs and his friends. Sister Bear rightly says, that doesn't seem like a very fair fight. Fox hunts seem like a horrible way to torture an animal unto death. And Papa's like, you're right. But they also notice the cat hates dogs. She starts hissing and spitting whenever dogs are around. Fine, remember that. Then Cousin Fred comes running up. Help, 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 he says. I've been robbed. And the cubs are like, we are the bear detectives. You know we're the bear detectives. You are one of three. You, me, and other. We can solve any case with the help of our sniffer dog, Snuff. And Papa's like, and me, I'm Papa Q Bear. I'm very smart as well. And they're like, great, we're going to solve your mystery. What has been stolen? He's like, that's it. It's my sniffer dog, Snuff. Snuff has been stolen. Somebody stole him. Here's literally what Cousin Fred says. He's like, I was out with Snuff. He was standing right there. I turned around. When I turned back, he was gone. Somebody stole my dog. And I'm like, dude, listen. And if you watched me watch the episodes, you know this is where I'm going. Here's the thing about dogs. They have four what? Legs. What's on the end of those legs? Feet. What's on the bottoms of those feet? Paws. Is that how it works? Are the paws the feet, or like the paw is like the front of the foot? In any case, dogs have four legs. What do they do with those legs? They walk. Where do they walk? Wherever they want. I think maybe your dog just walked off. Like that cousin Fred went straight to somebody stole my dog, as opposed to Snuff must have just run away, is wild to me. He owns a dog. He's a dog owner. But they're like, we're on the trail, but we don't know if we can help you. Snuff is literally the only thing we have in our toolbox. Like, literally, we just usually wait until Snuff tells us where the thing is we're looking for. That's the bear detectives. And so they're like, I guess we'll try. And Papa's like, what you need is a dog detector. And he brings up a Geiger counter. He's like a Geiger counter can detect radiation. And they're like, Papa, get your hat out of your. Papa, there's no such thing as a dog detector. And they run off. But Papa's like, wait a minute. The cat is, whenever there's dogs, he grabs the cat and he chases after them. Now, unfortunately, the cat will react that way in the presence of any dog. So first it causes Papa to assault Mayor Honeypot's wife because she's holding a dog and he accuses her of being a thief. He grabs her dog. She chases after him. They come across Grizzly Gramps and they're like, we need help. Here's the story. You probably figured out. Snuff just ran. He just ran away. Gramps is like, I saw Snuff. He was acting weird. And they're like, well, that means Snuff ran away. That means he must be an unhappy dog. And I'm like, dude, Snuff's a dog. He's just a dog. Like, he ran away because he saw something that distracted him. Snuff, they see Snuff. He's leading the fox hunt. And they're like, what? And then they're like, but wait, he's leading the hunt away from the woods. The woods is where Mrs. Fox is. Again, they know the animals in the vicinity by name, even though they want to kill them. Snuff is leading the hounds away from the foxes, because as they see, once the hounds are away from the foxes, Snuff returns to the woods, goes up to Mrs. Fox and like nuzzles her, and they're like, oh, Snuff and Mrs. Fox are friends. And I'm like, right, Snuff and Mrs. Fox are friends. Right, that's what we're calling it now, friends. It's clearly a romantic relationship. Also, I can't remember if Snuff is a boy or a girl. It doesn't matter. My favorite part of the episode, though, is Squire Grizzly and his friends on their horses and their baying hounds are now like out of the woods, and they look over at them. They see them. They're standing right there. They're over on the hillside, and brother or sister is like, Squire Grizzly's lost. Ha ha. And I'm like, well, they're not really lost. Like, it's not like they were relying on Snuff. They don't usually rely on Snuff. Like, all it's going to take, now that Snuff is back with the cubs, Squire Grizzly's other dogs are going to be like, oh, wait, we were wrong. The fox is actually over here. Like, now that Snuff is no longer leading them away, they're just going to find Mrs. Fox and her cubs and kill them, I guess, with blunderbusses. What do you hunt foxes with? I don't know. Again, going on a fox hunt, terribly unfair in like the realm of hunting. It's not just like I'm hunting an elk. It's like, no, it's this very small animal that's terrified. I've got horses and baying hounds and a lot of guns and friends to help me kill this animal. And then we all go home and celebrate. It sounds like something rich people would do. Squire Grizzly's a billionaire. We're lucky that it's not like children he's hunting, because that's what happens. So what's weird, though, is that this episode is called The Cat's Meow. And at the end of the day, doesn't matter if there was a cat in it or not. Puff, cute cat, nicely animated, but honestly doesn't do anything. They run into Grizzly Gramps, who's like, your dog is over there. That's what the bear detective. And they say at the end, they're like, another case solved by the bear detectives. And I'm like, you didn't do. Is that the joke? Was that Stan and Jan's joke? Was that the whole point? Was that the bear detectives don't actually solve a single mystery? Like, they're just walking down the road, and Grizzly Gramps is like, I saw your dog. He went that direction. And they're like, well, look, he's right there. There he comes. Is that the joke? Is that what's funny about it? Am I missing that entirely? Has that been the joke from day one? Has 10 and a half years of this show finally driven home that Stan and Jan were just goofing on the concept of kid detectives? That kid detectives don't actually ever solve anything? That their mysteries are no harder than, like, where is the dog? He is over there. Because the books even are like, here comes the wise old owl to tell us exactly where the thing is we're looking for. Here's Snuff to tell us exactly where the thing is we're looking for. Here's the tic-tac-toe king cheating on tic-tac-toe. Is that the joke? Have I been missing that the entire time? Viewers and listeners, let me know. Is it really that simple? In any case, it doesn't matter if there was a cat there. The cat played no role in this except giving us something to happen at the beginning of the story, I guess. Cute cat. And we have a bear named Honey Bear. Is that who Honey Bear is named after? I guess we'll never know. So that was the Surefire Bait and the Cat's Meow. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining me here on Deep in Bear Country. We'll be back with another episode soon that's based on a book that I'm a big fan of. And also another episode that becomes a book that I'm not really a fan of, but that exists and that we already talked about today on this episode, this very episode. That's right. Next week, we're going to be covering the sequel to The Surefire Bait, The Coughing Catfish. And we're going to be covering The Trouble with Friends, the introduction of Lizzie Bruin, and the only appearance of Lizzie Bruin in the animated series, this animated series. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for joining me. Thank you so much for being a part of this. And I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.